you think husbands change a lot since then and then?
Definitely. Definitely. And I think it changed in the home before it changed in the schools. I think a lot of parents feel guilty because they have to work.
Mm-hmm.
It's either apathy, the fact they don't give a hoot what the kids are doing, or the fact that they feel guilty, and so they feel like they have to compensate for not being with their kids by defending anything that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got in trouble for leaving campus. One time, my whole school career, I left campus. We were all going to go shopping, and they caught us leaving the parking lot, and we were so scared we went home. And when I walked in the door, Mother knew something was wrong, and she said, well, you know, when you pay, well, you pay. So she told me to go back to school and take whatever they did to me. And I knew that if I didn't get it straightened out, that I would be in trouble at home.
Mm-hmm.
If that happened today, the parents would have accompanied, you know, if my mother were one of the typical mothers I deal with, that she would have gone up to the school and raised Holy Sand because I was not getting my needs met, or something really obscure, you know, something strange, and it would wind up being the school's fault that I was skipping. You know, everybody's really quick to look for someone to put the blame on, and of course the parents can't accept the blame, because if they do, it's like they're saying they failed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easier to say that teacher did this, or that principal did this, or somebody else did it, rather than to accept the blame that their kid may be just a total jerk and needs to have the Board of Education. Now, I think that, you know, corporal punishment, yeah. My kids were raised with a fly swat and wore out several of them. And to this day, they still laugh about getting spankings with a fly swat. They're not emotionally warped in any manner. And there's a difference. People now are thinking that corporal punishment means you take a board and you beat them till they bleed.
Mm-hmm.
But you can give a kid two or three licks. It's not going to do anything but maybe leave a bruise, which will heal. And I guarantee you they won't do whatever they got the paddling for again. And my children believe in spankings. They were never marked up or bruised. When spankings didn't work, there gets to be an age when spankings didn't work. You know, fly swat wasn't quite as effective when we went through the really bad elementary ages. So then we went to the tiny out chair. But, you know, at the same time, when my kids were growing up, when they were preschool and elementary, our neighbors were very, very liberal. Now, they were the hippies.
Mm-hmm.
She was a medical doctor, and he's now got his PhD in botany, I believe. But they didn't believe in corporal punishment at all. And yet I have seen their children walk into our house and totally demolish the house. I've seen them use language that my kids knew better than to use because they would get punished. Their children were physically violent, even though they've never been violently punished. And my kids get angry with one another, but I've never seen them try to hurt each other. And the last time we saw them, I think they were like 15, 16. The four of them were very close in age, and they ranged from like 15 to 17.
Mm-hmm.
And my children asked me, really, I said, please, Mama, don't make us visit with him again. And I said, well, I thought you would. James Rachel, and she said, Aaron said, no, Mother, she said, you wouldn't believe how they talked to each other. You know, hurting things that they said. And he physically reached over and slapped her several times, pulled her hair. She was hitting him in the stomach. And this is just on a 30-minute visit. They also found out while they were in there that the daughter was sexually active. I'm sure the son probably wasn't, and they both experimented with drugs. Which, you know, no mother can say for a fact, but I don't think that my girls are into that kind of thing. Now, I think that I would probably know, maybe, I hope. But right there, you know, the same thing that kept me from doing things, they have that fear of them. They're afraid of their father. Although he did very little with the discipline when he was growing up. I think that's why they're afraid of him. They don't know what he might do.
Mm-hmm.
But corporal punishment has its place, but I don't think it needs to be totally in the schools. I think the parents are going to take some responsibility. It's like we're fixing to start teaching character education to our students, which I think is a fine idea, but I think if you've got teachers who aren't teaching character education by example, then you can forget walking in and telling them they're going to be cheerful for 1 week. You know, you've got, it's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But what do? You teach a kid to be cheerful for 5 days and he leaves the school and goes home where mom and dad are screaming and hollering or one of them's laying around dead drunk or, you know, there's drugs in the home or who knows what else. What good does that do? You know, we're going to have to send the handouts home. if we're going to be effective in teaching character education, which I don't want to teach it.
I've never heard of
it. Well, that's what I'm doing. In our spare time, along with the remediation teaching course of study and everything else that we get to do. Plus, I like to teach kids to write because they're going to know how to write when they get to college. But, I think that, you know, everybody blames it on the family. Education blames family. Family blames education. But kids want discipline. You know, kids that are bad, quote-unquote kids, at school, I don't have any problem with.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the day they walk in, I tell them where the boundaries are. And they know. And very, very seldom have I ever had to have any help with a discipline problem. I've been teaching at Oxford since 85, and I've sent two kids to the office, I think.
Really?
Well, there's no season. If I can't handle it, I'm not doing my job. And I, you know, like I said, the kids appreciate knowing where their boundaries are. You know, very seldom, once I make a ruling on kids' behavior, it's a mutual thing on it, and once I make a ruling on it in my classroom, I don't have a lot of discussion about it. Because the kids realize if I've come down on them, they've deserved it. The only problem I've had is when I've had a disagreement with a student in class, I have to watch out because my other kids think they have to protect me. And they try to go behind. And in fact, I had a young man this year, we had a few words in class. And I found out that later in the day, two of my boys from that same class went and told him that they were going to meet him after school and beat him up if he didn't start being nice for me. And I had to go find them and say, look, I'm a big girl. I can handle my problems, okay? But they thought that they were helping out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, little watchdogs sitting in the back there. But the kids want to know. They appreciate knowing that this is a line and you don't go over it because if you do, there are consequences. And I think a lot of parents some of my friends have done the same thing. They say, okay, don't do this again or you'll be punished. And the kids do it and they say, well, okay, but don't do it again. And, you know, the kids realize they can keep getting away with stuff. Whereas if after that first time they were punished, there wouldn't be any more toeing the line and stepping around doing it again. No, that's not the cure-all, but I think that would help. I firmly believe in corporal punishment. Let's see.
What about role models for females in education? Do you think there are enough role models for females? Because, I don't know how you see the difference in how females were treated when you were in education compared to how they're treated now.
Well, I grew up in a, I guess probably a unique home. My mother and father are still married, although they were divorced when I was an infant. When I was less than a year old, they divorced. And then they remarried, of course, with four more children, maybe. But I never was told there was anything I couldn't do or couldn't accomplish. I did a lot of things, and I always felt like that I never did anything that was pleasing my father's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I found out many years later, that he constantly bragged about me. And I said, my second sister is his favorite, mm-hmm. and he knows that. She almost died several times when she was young, and so she's always been real special to him. But he brags about things I've done and all, but he never will say anything to me. And I credit him partially with getting a BS degree because he never thought I would. And so I did, I think, just to show them for one thing. My mother, on the other hand, she was proud of me and always praised me for everything I did, but she never seemed surprised. She was equally unsurprised and unemotional about the trouble I got into or the good things I did. It was just that she expected me to do those things. There was never any great shock either way. And so far as role models in education, most of the people I associated with in education were female. The male teachers that I had in school were very lacking. I didn't have very many good male teachers. Freshman year in college, I had a very bad experience with a male English teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this needs to be put on tape because it'll be right now later. I'm probably the only English teacher in history that has an F in 101.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Got it on my record. Big time. Gadsden State. But it was an all-girls class in Gadsden at that time. I was doing a lot of nurses' education from the hospitals running. And very full class, and there were only five kids in the class that weren't in nurses' training. Five of us were in education. And first day in class, the guys were in neck brace because he had lost control of his jag. Just kind of, he was known for having female students at his apartment entertaining them and so forth. He was, you know, disreputable totally, I thought. But as we started leaving the room, he made an assignment for our first essay, the very first day, 5 minutes into class, write me an essay on the most important thing in the world. And I will tell you that in an undergraduate school, I didn't play any of the games. I was going to be me. They could like it and give me the grade they wanted, whatever. Mm-hmm. Graduate school, I learned differently because I had two children, was working a full-time job, so it made a difference. I had to make the B's at least to stay in. But we started out the door after this big assignment, the most important thing in the world. And as we reached the door of the class, he said, "Oh yeah, and I don't want anybody to get religious on me." Well, that just hit me the wrong way. So we were commuting on the way back home. I started thinking about it, and I went in at night and sat down, and I started out with quotation marks. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Those quotation marks. And I wrote this big thing full of 50-cent words about how God's creation and forgiveness of man, that was the most important thing in the world, because if that didn't exist, there'd be no cause or reason for the world. You know, pretty convincing essay, I thought. And so the next class meeting, we turned him in. The next class meeting, he gave it back to me, and I had an F, about half as big as the outside of the paper on it, and see me, not marked a single thing wrong in it. But he told me if I would write it over and turn it in the next class meeting the next day, that he would consider regrading it. So on the way to school the next day, in a carpool of five idiots, you know, they thought it was fun to swerve in and out of traffic and make everybody scream and honk, I wrote my essay because I refused to do it at home. I was so angry. And I wrote, "Love is a soft kit and then a sweet rose and all sorts of issue gets you throw up stuff." Mm-hmm. And I got an A. On the way to school, no rough draft, no pre-writing, nothing. I just wrote it, just a bunch of garbage, and it gave me an A. And I went to the dean and wanted to change classes. By this time, it was already like a week into the quarter. He wouldn't let me change teachers. So I just quit going. So I'm probably the only English teacher who has an F and had to take remedial English. And I went in remedial English with Mrs. Deal, who was a wonderful role model. I mean, she was terrific, a good teacher. And after the second day in there, I wound up helping her grade her 101 papers. And she's the one who taught me everything I should have learned in 101. And so she was a wonderful, wonderful role model, wonderful teacher. And then the guy that I had put going to his class wanted to be my advisor for the rest of the year. So we had some problems there. But she was great. He was not so good. Now, I think in recent years, I've seen some really terrific role models for students, female role models for students in the classroom. I don't think there's so much female stereotyping as there used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's the way I was brought up. Well, I was talking to one of my little girls the other day, and then really she's got this talk, because she has got as much potential as I've ever seen a female in my life. She is so just truly gifted. Mm-hmm. Of course, she'll never be tested for the gifted program because she doesn't meet the criteria. Socially, I don't think. But anyway, I'm bitter about that because I taught special ed for so long.
Mm-hmm.
She needed to be so young. But we were talking about it, and I said, what are you going to do in that school? She said, "Well, I want to go into," and she told me the branch of medicine she wanted to go into.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "I want to go, because she can do it. She can do anything she wants to." Yeah, and I think there's more of that going on. And I've seen little girls learn that she, as far as the negative male models in school, I have seen a lot of improvement in recent years. I think the men that are coming to teaching now are much, much more dedicated to profession. Mm-hmm. I said, when I came through, and right before I came through college, a lot of the guys were going into teaching staying out of the Army.
Is that during Vietnam?
Yes. And that was their way of staying out. And we got a lot of people in teaching then that weren't in it for the profession. And my husband, well, you know, got out of teaching for a year and a half, and he was in a job where he had the potential to make a great deal of money. And the same job my brother-in-law is doing now. He just built a mansion, but you know. But we had one of our former students killed in an auto accident. He was 24 years old, so he'd been out for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to go. We had four phone calls a night. He was in another state. We had four phone calls a night. He died and making sure that we would be there for the service. And so when we went in and he saw all the kids that we had, you know, all the ones he touched, he said, well, on the way back home, he didn't say much. And he said, do you mind if I get back in? And I said, no. He said, well, I can't do anything else where I can make a difference. So this is where I think we've seen, and I've seen more people with his attitude than I have with, you know, I'm here because I get 3 months off in the summer kind of thing. But I've seen a lot more, and I've been lucky too in being associated with positive, good coaching staff. So that I kind of like death images I had in high school where they were not good teachers. But I think there are a lot of good role models out there. I think there are a lot of teachers who are in it for kids.